VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israeli lawmakers passed two laws on Monday that could threaten the work of the main United Nations agency providing aid to people in Gaza. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
Under the first law, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, or UNWAR, would be banned from conducting any activity or providing any service inside Israel, while the second would sever diplomatic ties with it. Israel has alleged that some of UNWAR's thousands of staff members participated in the Hamas attacks last year that sparked the war in Gaza. The agency fired 9 employees after an investigation, but denies it knowingly aids armed groups. I'm Norman Hall.
Successive crises and a collapsed government have left Lebanon's volunteer sector racing to meet the demands of the hundreds of thousands of people afflicted by war. For VOA, Jacob Russell reports from Beirut.
Since mid-September, Israel has expanded its war against Hezbollah into a widespread bombing campaign and ground invasion, displacing what UN officials say is an estimated 800,000 people. With each successive crisis that has beset Lebanon recently, the state has offered less and less assistance. Today, few have any expectations left. Mona El-Khalil, herself forced from her home in Beirut by Israeli bombs, now commutes back into the city to volunteer.
Our generation has realized that if we don't get things done, they're not going to get done by anyone, especially our government.
After the Beirut port explosion of 2020, activists implored international donors to bypass the Lebanese government when delivering aid, fearing that embezzlement and favoritism would prevent the help from going where it was needed. Jacob Russell, VOA News, Beirut.
This is VOA News. The U.S. says North Korea has sent more troops to Russia for training and fighting in Ukraine. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Just 3 days ago, the Biden administration said it was possible more than 3,000 North Koreans were there. Now,
we believe that the DPRK has sent around 10,000 soldiers in total to train in eastern Russia. That will probably augment Russian forces near Ukraine over the next several weeks.
Pentagon spokeswoman Sabrina Singh says the U.S. is now more worried Russia intends to either use those soldiers in combat or to support combat operations in the Kursk region. New NATO chief Mark Rutte said earlier some have already deployed there.
A dangerous expansion of Russia's war.
President Biden echoed that.
It's very dangerous. Very dangerous.
The U.S. warns the North Koreans are fair game if they enter the fight. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A new poll finds that American voters are approaching the presidential election with deep unease about what could follow. They are worried about the potential for political violence, attempts to overturn the results, and the implications for democracy. The survey from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research comes nearly 4 years after former U.S. President Donald Trump's refusal to accept the 2020 results inspired a mob of his supporters to violently storm the Capitol. About 4 in 10 registered voters say they are extremely or very worried about violent attempts to overturn the election results. Thousands gathered outside Georgia's parliament on Monday after the country's president and opposition parties called for protests against the results of an election they say was rigged. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino has more.
Georgia's government and electoral commission say Saturday's vote was free and fair, and that the ruling Georgian Dream Party won with nearly 54% of the vote. Yeah. Opposition parties dispute that, and election observers have said there were significant violations. The results are a blow for pro-Western Georgians. The vote was seen as a choice between a ruling party that has deepened ties with Russia and an opposition aiming to fast-track integration with Europe. President Salome Zurabishvili, who disputes the results alongside opposition parties, says the ruling party's vote share fell far short of the official tallies. She accused the ruling party of using Russian-style tactics and propaganda. Russia has denied any interference in the vote, saying it was the West that was trying to destabilize the situation.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
to the Break Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barkey, Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. America's youngest voters helped get out the vote with seven more days before the November election.
Well, I just want to see how it feels like voting for the first time. Because this is my first time voting for the actual presidential election. I want to see what is the procedure.
Nigerians weigh in on the U.S. presidential election. Botswana police break up an opposition protest over alleged election rigging. A judge in Malawi charges an opposition leader with conspiracies to murder President Chakwera. The U.N. Secretary General calls for decisive action to end Sudan's 18-month-long civil war.
The people of Sudan are living through a nightmare of violence with thousands of civilians killed and countless others facing unspeakable atrocities, including widespread rape and sexual assaults.
And the U.S. and Germany launched a joint conflict stability program for West Africa's coastal states. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The youngest voters taking part in the U.S. presidential election are called Gen Z. They range in age from roughly 18 to 27 years old. From learning how to vote to soliciting support door-to-door, many are embracing the civil process of voting. VOA's Laura Bowman has our story.
Thank you. Our first mock voter.
Student leaders at Montgomery College in Rockville, Maryland, recently set up a mock polling booth with sample ballots and invited election officials to conduct voter education. It's an effort to get students ready to vote in the November U.S. presidential election. Brittany Green is an organizer of the mock polling exercise.
Today's event was all about voter education and letting people see the polls, see what they were going to experience at the polls.
Participants like Akian Demong seem appreciative.
Well, I just want to see how it feels like voting for the first time, because this is my first time voting for the actual presidential election. I want to see what is the procedure.
These young voters care about a range of issues.
Financial issues with the debt of the country. I don't really understand much of it, but if I look at it, it looks like a big number. I don't understand why it's that high.
So I would say climate change is important, reproductive rights.
I think for many people, America's role in the world is a very important issue, particularly for young voters.
In the U.S. presidential race between Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Kamala Harris, most of the students we interviewed would not reveal who they'll be voting for. But the U.S. state of Maryland, a stronghold for Democrats, is expected to go for Harris. So we asked the head of the Georgia Young Republicans, Jacqueline Harn, what issues matter to her Republican peers. For many, she said, it's about the economy.
Between housing, between inflation with grocery prices and gas prices ever increasing, it's unaffordable to live and have a family right now.
And how should campaigns go about reaching young voters?
You're not going to reach a Gen Z voter by doing a phone bank and phone calling them because they probably have a spam blocker on their phone or they're just not going to answer a number they don't know. Because we're the social media generation. Everything that we looked at is on social media. We did our news from social media.
Democratic social media influencer Harry Sisson agrees.
And I'd say primarily, maybe the main news app for young people is probably TikTok. That's my main platform. And, whatever reason that may be, I think it's mostly because it's digestible. A lot of these news segments that you see on TikTok are 30 to 60 seconds.
Meantime, in Herndon, Virginia, Kamala Harris supporter Camila Alfonso Mesa goes house to house trying to encourage people to vote for her candidate. They don't always open the door, but she keeps at it.
Hi. Definitely her supporters.
She says that Harris replacing President Joe Biden in the presidential race was invigorating for young Democrats.
I have seen a big shift in energy and enthusiasm since the vice president became the nominee.
Alfonso Mesa thinks the Gen Z voting bloc of over 40 million young people could make a real difference in the presidential election. Laurel Bowman, VOA News.
Some Nigerians are weighing in on the U.S. presidential race to the White House between former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. Nigerians who shared their thoughts with our reporter in Abuja say both Trump and Harris have an equal chance of gaining the presidency.
As the U.S. 2024 election draws near, many people in Nigeria are apprehensive about the outcome of the election. The presidential race is a battle between former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. The Executive Director, Gender Strategy Advancement International, Adora Sydney Jack, is confident that Harris will defeat Trump.
Most predominantly is the feeling that I get that the American women want to make a statement with Kamala. They also want to disrupt the mystery behind a woman going to the White House. And I think for that to happen, and if it does happen, it will open different layers of conversation and open doors, rooms to more women across the continent of the United States, of Africa, to begin to see more women in leadership.
Meanwhile, Ike Ekoma, a media consultant and a public affairs analyst, told VOA that both Trump and Harris have equal chances.
So it's a bit of a yo-yo dancing right now, because this is the closest we've come watching American elections. This is the closest we have seen it in recent years, where the two candidates are almost neck and neck, and then in many polls they say it's too close to call. So we don't know who gets to win, frankly.
Ekoma also pointed out how tricky the American electoral system is, which differs from the presidential system of government as practiced in Nigeria. The U.S. uses a system designed over 240 years ago called the Electoral College. It assigns electoral votes to each of the 50 states according to their population. There are a total of 537 electoral votes nationwide, and 270 are needed for the winning candidate to gain the presidency. In recent elections, polls show the popularity among voters of the two main candidates are nearly equal in about seven so-called swing states. That will help one of the two major parties reach 270. As a result, campaigning intensifies in this handful of states to attract the support of a slim number of voters, often less than 5%, who say they are undecided. Ekoma says it can often be a challenge for foreigners to relate to the system.
Why would the whole, I think, 50 states in America cast their votes and is divided by just a handful of states? And why were they campaigning in all these other states if their votes were not going to give them enough numbers to win the Electoral College? It might as well just have the elections in those states that decide the election in America. So it's really baffling how that system works, and for everybody it's confusing.
Speaking of why Nigerians and Africans are interested in the U.S. elections, Madukwe Ukebu, a federal commissioner at the Public Complaints Commission, says Americans' decisions and policies go far beyond its borders.
As a true leader in world affairs and a decision maker, particularly in the United Nations and all the organizations that bind the world, America has inserted her power and her leadership in formulating policies that will not only impact on Africa, but also on countries like Nigeria. That is why, in most cases, Nigerians are very much interested in what happens in America.
Ukebu emphasizes that since over a million Nigerians and Nigerian Americans live, study, and work in the U.S., there's every reason for them to be interested in the elections.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 29th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for decisive action on Monday to end the 18-month-long civil war in Sudan, where millions face starvation and have been displaced from their homes. Gutierrez said subframe is growing by the day as he expressed deep concern about the situation in the capital of North Darfur, El Fasher, where fighting has escalated since mid-April.
18 months have passed since brutal fighting erupted between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces. The suffering is growing by the day, with almost 25 million people now requiring assistance. The people of Sudan are living through a nightmare of violence, with thousands of civilians killed and countless others facing unspeakable atrocities, including widespread rape and sexual assaults. In recent days, we have heard shocking reports of mass killings and sexual violence in villages in Al Jazeera State in the east of the country. They are also enduring a nightmare of hunger, as more than 750,000 people face catastrophic food insecurity and famine conditions take hold in displacement sites in North Darfur, while millions struggle to feed themselves every day. They are confronting a nightmare of disease, with cholera, malaria, dengue fever, measles, and rubella spreading fast. A nightmare of collapsed infrastructure, with vital health systems, transportation networks, water and sanitation systems, supply routes, and agricultural production grinding to a halt. A nightmare of displacement, the largest displacement crisis in the world, with more than 11 million people fleeing since April last year, including nearly 3 million who have crossed into neighboring countries. A nightmare of extreme weather, with nearly 600,000 people affected by heavy rains and floods this summer. And Sudan is once again rapidly becoming a nightmare of mass ethnic violence, in particular with the dramatic escalation of fighting in El Fasher. Madam President, we have consistently appealed to both sides to end the fighting. We face the serious possibility of the conflict igniting regional instability from Sahel to the Horn of Africa to the Red Sea.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking Monday during a Security Council debate on the conflict in Sudan. Opposition activists took to the streets of Botswana over the weekend ahead of general elections set for Wednesday. They wanted to march to Zimbabwe's embassy with a petition that voiced the concerns the neighboring country is conspiring to help Botswana's ruling party extend its 58-year hold on power. But as Nkudisi Dube reports from Habaroni, the marchers did not reach their destination.
The weekend march was organized by a coalition of opposition parties under the umbrella for Democratic Change, or UDC. But police, wielding guns, batons and shields, pushed back the marchers and barricaded roads, forcing them to disperse. UDC representative Penyo Butale read out the petition despite the failed effort to reach the Zimbabwean embassy. The petition urged Zimbabwe not to interfere in Botswana's election. Butale tells VOA there have been reports Zimbabwe wants to aid the ruling Botswana Democratic Party, or BDP, by helping to rig this Wednesday's election. The party has been in power since 1966. Its candidate, President Mokgweetsi Masisi, is seeking a second term. He faces three challengers.
We decided to march to the Zimbabwean embassy because we have been receiving information, credible information, that there is an attempt by the Zimbabwean government to assist their friends here and the ruling party in Botswana through clandestine means.
Butale says the police were not supposed to prevent them from marching to the embassy. Police say that for a demonstration to take place, the organizers must obtain a permit first. But political analyst Zibani Maundeni, a professor at the University of Botswana, says the police actions could be viewed as political.
Police have to be the neutral body. If people organize a peaceful demonstration, there's no reason why it should be stopped. In many countries in the region, the police have been a problem, acting in favor of the ruling party.
Meanwhile, the ruling BDP has denied claims it is working with Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party to win the elections. Equally, ZANU-PF spokesperson Farai Marapira says there is no truth in the Botswana opposition's allegations.
As ZANU-PF, we do not interfere in the internal activities of another country. We do not interfere in the processes. We respect the electoral processes in different countries. And we support what the people of those countries will have decided on. This is just absurd, and it's unfair for the needs or to the people of Botswana themselves.
The haggling of early voting in Botswana has also been criticized, with reports saying some polling stations ran out of ballot papers. Masisi is a former vice president. Masisi took office in 2018 after he was handpicked to succeed President Ian Khama, who stepped down that year. Masisi was officially elected in 2019 to a 5-year term. Kondisi Dube, VOA News, Havroni.
In Botswana, the chairperson of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, also known as MISA, is calling on journalists and media houses to uphold the highest ethics to ensure citizens get accurate information during the coming elections. This comes as voters go to the polls in a national election on Wednesday, October 30th. MISA chairperson Thomas Nkoma tells VOA's Peter Clotty that journalists should be mindful of their duty to uphold the core values of journalism.
It is very critical that as journalists or journalist media practitioners, they practice very high standards of ethics, and that the information they put out there is very authentic, because nowadays we are competing with social media and there is a lot of misinformation and disinformation online. So journalists must rise above these issues of misinformation and disinformation and report fairly and without bias and independently, because if they don't put out correct information, verified information, then it might cause problems, it might confuse the voters.
MISA also expressed concern about journalists taking to social media platforms to share information that sometimes MISA thinks are unverified, which could create tension and possibly confusion.
Yes, we have noticed that some of our journalists are taking to social media, and some of them are openly endorsing certain individuals or certain political parties. And this is not good for the media to be doing that such, because if we are competing with social media, people won't be able to distinguish between professional media or traditional media and citizen journalists. So as journalists, we must be able to distinguish ourselves from those who are citizen journalists and make sure that what we put out there is very authentic, is verified.
Thomas, what do you say to the recent Ombudsman's report that stated that BTV, the state broadcaster, coverage of elections appeared to show that 86% of its report are in favor of BDP, the ruling party? Why is MISA not addressing this to the state media?
I think it's very unfortunate that the BTV has been found to be maybe biased. As MISA, we have engaged the government that we need to have a fair coverage of all political parties. We have met the Minister of Presidential Affairs, where we raised such issues that we need to have fair coverage of all the parties. And we are also, for a long time, we have been advocating for public media, that the state media should be transformed into a public media so that every political party is given fair coverage. But as things stand now, I think it's very unfortunate that BTV seem to be biased.
Thomas Nkoma is the chairperson of the Media Institute of Southern Africa. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotin. A judge in Malawi has charged opposition leader Patricia Kaliati with conspiracy to murder President Lazarus Chakwera. Kaliati is the secretary general of the opposition United Transformation Movement, the UTM party, the party of the late Vice President Salos Chilima, who died in June in a plane crash. She was arrested and jailed last week without charge. UTM spokesperson Felix Jawala tells me that the judge also granted Kaliati bail with stern conditions, including a cash bond of 1 million kwacha, or about $500, and the surrender of her passport.
She has been granted bail.
Was she charged?
Yes, she has been charged for conspiracy to murder the president of the country.
That's a very serious charge.
Yes, it is.
When would the trial start?
It will start on 11th of... No, I think plea will take place on 11th of 12th November 2024.
Initially, the police said that she was conspiring with others. Did the charge today say who the others are?
Well, they mentioned the names, and they said they are still at large.
Who are they? Do you know them at all?
No, we don't. there are names that some of them we've not heard of.
What does the UTM think about this whole thing?
Like we said in our press statement, we are very concerned with the circumstances surrounding our detention and the way this whole case has been handled. You know, her detention, despite the police claim that they are continuing with the investigation, for us, it raises a lot of questions regarding issues to do with transparency, integrity and accountability of the law enforcement processes. And I think the judge made a statement to that regard, saying the police must use the Police Act guideline where investigation starts before arresting a person. But it looks like the police rushed to arrest Honorable Kariat before conducting investigation, because the magistrate said that by the affidavit from the police, they claimed that the investigation started some time back. But their presentation in the court reflected something different. We look at it as a political persecution because of the factors surrounding her arrest. And also, you look at the prolonged detention. She was arrested on a Thursday, Friday, the police had not yet prepared documents for the court. And Saturday, Sunday.
Did the court set any conditions for the bail?
Yes, they did. They asked her to deposit her passport with the court. There is a 1 million kwacha surety and 500,000 kwacha surety. Then she will have to be reporting to police headquarters every fortnight on a Monday at a time of convenience. If she wants to travel out of the country, she must apply from the court.
And all this is happening ahead of your party's convention, is that right?
Yes, we are having a convention on the 17th of November.
Felix Njawala is the spokesperson for the opposition United Transformation Movement, UTM Party of Malawi. He was speaking with me from Blantyre. The U.S. State Department has warned that it would restrict U.S. visas for people who undermine Ghana's democracy ahead of the West African country's general election in December, according to the Associated Press. Ghana has held peaceful, free, fair, and transparent elections for nearly two decades. The presidential and parliamentary elections will be held concurrently on December 7th. It will be the ninth consecutive general election since the country's return to multi-party democracy in 1992. But allegations of voter roll irregularities this year have created concerns about a possible democratic backsliding. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says in a statement that the visa policy announced on Monday will be directed only at people who undermine democracy and not at the government or people of Ghana. South Africa has delivered a nearly 5,000-page document to the United Nations top court. It is the latest step in a case the country brought accusing Israel of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. And that's it for this Tuesday, October 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.
Presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in brief, airs every day at 400, 500, and 600 UTC. give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.